Pete Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Tuesday, July 17th, 2018. Trump is getting slammed from all sides. The media, Democrats, and some Republicans are separating themselves after his performance in the summit and news conference in Helsinki, Finland, just yesterday. And we have a late-breaking report here at the Washington Post just as I sat down to record the podcast today. And Trump made a statement in which he criticized himself slightly. He said that he misspoke while he was on the podium with Putin.
I've said this many times. I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also. I said, what is going on? What's the big deal? So I got a transcript. I reviewed it. I actually went out and reviewed a clip of an answer that I gave. And I realized that there is a need for some clarification. It should have been obvious. I thought it would be obvious, but I would like to clarify just in case it wasn't. In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. So just to repeat it, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. And the sentence should have been, and I thought it would be maybe a little bit unclear on the transcript or unclear on the actual video. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative. So you can put that in, and I think that probably clarifies things pretty good by itself. All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server.
So this is a bizarre event. Trump, who never admits that he's done anything wrong, was reading from a script badly as you heard all those cameras clicking. And what you heard there was produced by the Washington Post, and they did a quick rewind so that we heard the actual comment that he's trying to modify from the news conference in Helsinki. And this is part of a big backlash that has been growing. And I see this as a largely scripted effort to tighten the noose that I call Russiagate. And I know that many people will not even listen to nuanced or detailed comments. What I've seen is a lot of binary thinking, a lot of black and white presentation of false choices, that Trump can either side with Putin or embrace all of the findings of the intelligence community. And that is irrational and unhelpful. But it advances the political firestorm that people are trying to build in an effort to get rid of Trump. And I support getting rid of Trump. I truly do. But I want to base it on rational thinking, on actual evidence, and not on simply trying to pile on to a guy who is caught between his own fanciful thinking, his desire to create his own reality, and the forces that are arrayed against him. Now, earlier today, Trump had tweeted, while I had a great meeting with NATO raising vast amounts of money, I had an even better meeting with Putin of Russia. Sadly, it's not being reported that way. The fake news is going crazy. Now, at the risk of being treated as some sort of a Trump apologist, this guy is a huge embarrassment. I cringe whenever he opens his mouth in public. And I cringe a lot more when I see him attempting to play statesman without any of the minimal preparation, without talking to experts and being briefed, because he's so brilliant and like a stable genius. So this guy is a cartoon, oafish president that we are stuck with right now. But that doesn't mean that everything he does, everything he says, is idiotic. And so we are seeing people call him treasonous, call him a traitor. And some of it is really silly stuff, as we'll get to in a moment. We have thundering denunciations coming from people like John McCain. Today's press conference in Helsinki was one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president in memory. The damage inflicted by Trump's naivete, egotism, false equivalence, and sympathy for autocrats is difficult to calculate. But it is clear that the summit in Helsinki was a tragic mistake. Now, I don't really know what the purpose of the summit was. We still don't have any clear idea. Trump wanted some FaceTime with Putin to show that he can walk shoulder to shoulder with world leaders. But beyond that, what I hear from Trump here is that because he didn't punch Putin in the face, because he didn't insult him the way he did Theresa May, that he didn't come in with contradictory statements and kind of aggressive action the way he did with NATO leaders, members of the European Union? Well, I deplore Trump's bad behavior. The fact that he was more polite with Putin says things about Trump that we may never understand. What is his attraction to the dictator of Russia? And here's Nancy Pelosi. Yesterday, President Trump cowered before President Putin and engaged in a dangerous, disgraceful, and damaging show of his Blame America First policy. His total weakness in the presence of Putin proves that the Russians have something on the president, personally, financially, or politically. Now, it may be true that they have compromise on him. Chris Wallace got a pretty good interview. He asked tough questions. Putin doesn't always answer them. And Putin kind of laughed at the idea without denying that they've got a P-tape or some other kind of compromising stuff on Trump. But listen to this phrase that Pelosi uses, the Blame America First policy. Now, of course, in some ways, that's riffing off his Make America Great and America First intonations of these nationalist, jingoistic slogans. But remember, it was just 8 or 9 years ago that Republicans hammered Barack Obama after he gave a speech in Cairo where he acknowledged that the U.S. expansionism and the adventurism in the Middle East was ill-advised. And he was hammered for Blame America First. And, you know, we're told that no American president can apologize or admit any failings on the part of our country when he is on a foreign stage. But as you know, when Trump mangled his comment and said something to the effect that, you know, we were all to blame for the problems between Russia and the United States, well, I think what he was driving at is that the U.S. had a role in the revolution in Ukraine, the coup that took out the corrupt Yanukovych government. And it was part of our long-running effort to use NATO to encircle Russia and to limit its potential for expansion, whether by crossing borders, expanding borders, or just through trade and ordinary relations. And so our effort to block Russia, and Putin in particular, led to his decision to grab Crimea. And if you've heard me talk about this before, I don't countenance what Putin did. But he did it, it's done. The sanctions are not having any impact. He's not going to say, oh, you were right, and I'm giving Crimea back to Ukraine. And the U.S. continues to deny that we had, or we don't acknowledge, let me put it that way, the role that we played and the payback that Putin engaged in. And so when we look at the long line of people who have criticism for Trump today, and I want to single out some Republicans here. Orrin Hatch of Utah. Now, it's interesting to see that many of these people continue to sit on the fence. As Bob Corker put it, they don't want to poke the bear. But they also feel that they need to pledge allegiance to the deep state, to the intelligence communities. And so, this is what passes for separation of Republicans from their president right now. Orrin Hatch, Russia interfered in the 2016 election. Our nation's top intelligence agencies all agree on that point. Lamar Alexander, Tennessee, there's no doubt that Russia interfered in our 2016 presidential election. Chair of Intelligence in the Senate, Richard Burr, North Carolina. Vladimir Putin is not our friend, never has been, nor does he want to be our friend. His regime's actions prove it. We must make clear that the United States will not tolerate hostile Russian activities against us or our allies. John Boozman, Senator from Arkansas. Our nation's intelligence community, as well as the Senate IC, is confident that Russia intervened in the 2016 elections. I agree with their assessment. Believe our relationship with Russia must consistently be viewed through this lens. And I guess the talking point issued by the RNC is repeated here again. Russia is not our friend. And, you know, I get that statement from a lot of the people on Facebook who think I'm crazy for not embracing the Russiagate narrative. They immediately say Russia is not our friend. Well, I never said Russia's our friend. I've never, ever made a claim even remotely resembling that. I do not believe that Russia is currently our enemy. And I believe that the black and white thinking and the politically motivated messages of the last 24 hours are very dangerous and can lead us to an internal coup of our own driven by the deep state. Tom Cotton, knuckle-dragon senator from Arkansas, Iraq war vet, U.S.-Russia relations remain at a historic low for one simple reason. Putin is a committed adversary of the United States. Now, while these statements don't call out Trump, there are 27 of them that I have listed right in front of me here. All Republicans, all members of the United States Senate. What this indicates to me is that the loyalty to Trump is softening. And this is where I believe Democrats need to show some balls. And they won't. But if they had them, they would start talking about impeachment right now. And they would frame it as, this may cost us the election this fall. But the future of our nation is too important. And therefore, at the risk of losing the election and not regaining control of the House, Democrats are going to stand up for the nation. But they don't do that. And that's what's so infuriating. And it's another thing that drives my continuing skepticism of this whole scandal. My friend Joe Lauria at Consortium News writes, U.S. media losing its mind over Trump-Putin press conference. He leads with a quote from James Fallows in The Atlantic. Either Trump is flat out an agent of Russian interests, maybe witting, maybe unwitting, from fear of blackmail and hope of future deals, out of respect for Putin, out of gratitude for Russia's help during the election, out of pathetic inability to see beyond his 306 electoral votes, whatever the exact mixture of motives might be, Fallows says, it really doesn't matter. Anderson Cooper on CNN watched the press conference and then said, this is perhaps one of the most disgraceful performances by an American president that I have ever seen. David Gergen, the eminence grise of CNN, said, I've never heard an American president talk that way. Putin's a thug. It's embarrassing. Then Jim Acosta, who was told to sit down and shut up by Trump when he tried to ask a question in England last week. He is supposed to be an opinion-free, objective reporter. He said, I think this sums it up nicely. This is the president of the United States essentially taking the word of the Russian president over his own intelligence community. So there are only two choices, Putin or the CIA. And then you get the tweet from John Brennan, who I think is the co-author of the Russiagate narrative script. He tweeted, Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors. It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Well, what Brennan just described there is the basis for impeachment, high crimes and misdemeanors. But nobody's talking about impeachment. And that's the disconnect here that drives me bonkers. In particular, the Democrats, who believe that this is the dagger on the heart of our republic, But they're not trying to grab that dagger and sink it into the heart of this insidious president. Liz Cheney stepped up, said that Russia poses a great threat to our national security, and that she is deeply troubled by Trump's defense of Putin. And Joe Lauria goes on to note that the indictments, which are only unproven accusations, formally accused 12 members of Russian military intelligence of stealing Democratic Party emails. The indictments were announced Friday, 3 days before the summit, with the clear intention of getting Trump to cancel it. Michael Smirkanish on CNN, he's a radio talk show host who made it to television, he said the indictments prove Russia had committed a terrorist attack against the United States. And we've heard that language before, comparing it to Pearl Harbor. And again, if people really believe this, if they honor their own rhetoric, wouldn't they take different actions? That's what makes me suspect this is kind of a charade. It's a high drama. Where does it go? Where does it lead? Do we have leaders? Also, Trump made a comment in Helsinki that I found interesting and intriguing. He referred to Imran Awan. And after the July 4th break, I reported that Awan, who was the IT advisor to Debbie Wasserman Schultz and many Democrats on Capitol Hill, had taken a plea deal about a mortgage violation. And according to the inspector general, he was found no evidence that Imran Awan violated federal law with respect to the House computer systems. But I'm really skeptical about that. I'd like to see an open-air investigation of Imran Awan, but now that he's taken a plea deal, that'll never happen. And I think Trump's suspicions there are not off base. Again, I don't know what Imran Awan did, but his ties to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the falling out, his fleeing to Pakistan, his return to face charges, the plea deal, well, my bullshit detector is activated by his whole story. And I want to single out Vice News, because they're younger, hipper, and I do appreciate that Vice does a better job than most American media outlets in covering what we used to call foreign news, things that happen outside of our borders. But their identification with the deep state, their protection of access to anonymous sources who can leak new juicy government documents to them in the future? Well, it's pretty clear. Just listen to this headline. 5 times Trump totally agreed with Vladimir Putin. You know what one of those 5 things was? That Russia did a great job hosting the World Cup. Wow, that's traitorous. That's treason. He went and told a foreign leader that he did a good job hosting an international sports competition? And Vice item number one here is that Trump said the relationship between the U.S. and Russia is bad and the U.S. is to blame. He actually said both sides are to blame, and that he said that about Charlottesville, too. It's bullshit. But Vice is not being honest in the way they're hammering Trump in this particular article. They single out the claim or the commentary that came from Trump and Putin that Moscow might cooperate with the Mueller investigation and let his investigators come and interview the dozen indicted military intelligence officers who got the indictment on Friday the 13th. And this is ridiculed as they should investigate the meddling together. Now, I realize that this will never happen because U.S. intelligence would not allow any kind of this kind of sharing or a joint investigation. And, of course, they're so heavily invested that Russia did it that they cannot see beyond that. That is the only possibility that can be pursued, right? Now, Vice also suggests that there's something wrong because Putin and Trump agreed on securing Israel's border with Syria. I don't think that is a really nefarious outcome of their meeting. Next article advice, headline, Putin is still pushing the absurd idea of U.S.-Russia cybersecurity unit. And I already talked about that a little bit, but the headline here is very biased. And this is pandering to readers who now know that the signal from Vice is you should believe the entire Russiagate narrative, lock, stock, and barrel, because Trump believes Putin. That's where we've come to. And in an effort at token balance over advice, there's a very brief article that's linked to a video interview that I haven't seen yet. But it says, these American scholars say the real threat to the U.S. is Russophobia. And the scholars are Stephen Cohen, the acknowledged Russian expert from Columbia University, and John Mearsheimer, another foreign policy expert who I've interviewed. He's a critic of the policies of the state of Israel, and I have high regard for him in that respect. And Mearsheimer and Cohen both agree that they agree with Trump that whether you think that make, let's see, I'm trying to read this here. They both agree with Trump on what point? The point is that Russophobia is the most serious problem, I see. And they describe how these two people are tagged as Putin apologists and that their arguments are not heard. So this is a kind of feint in the direction of fair and balanced, but I find the tone of it dismissive of the very scholars who are featured in the video interview. And I mentioned that Chris Wallace of Fox News spent the interview ran just over half an hour. So given that it was involving translators, he probably had about 45 minutes with Putin. And Putin sneered at him and smirked at times. Wallace tried to hand off to him a copy of the Mueller indictments of the 12 Russian GRU officers. And Putin just didn't extend his hand. He just sat there and made Wallace put it on the coffee table between them. But there were some interesting exchanges between Putin and Chris Wallace. Wallace mentioned the Skripal case in England, and Putin noted that the British have never seen fit to share any evidence, any documents, or any of the details about the alleged use of Novichok in Salisbury, England. He said it's the same thing as the accusations with meddling into the election in America. We recently heard that two more people suffered from the same nerve agent that is called Novichok. I have never even heard the last names of these persons. Who are they? And so if you have a chance, you can probably find the Chris Wallace interview with Putin online, and it's worth watching. There's a guy named Bill Craddock, who I went to Northwestern University with. But it's not the same Bill Craddock who is a co-founder of Disobedient Media. And I want to thank our loyal listener and supporter, Faith Peoples, for sharing a link. I am linking to this Disobedient Media post in the podcast today. And they raise very interesting questions about the details that are disclosed in Mueller's Friday the 13th indictment. For example, over 500 days ago, evidence was found relating to the Guccifer 2.0 persona that showed that they had deliberately manipulated files to include Russian metadata. Also, a central comment here is that the Guccifer 2.0 initial releases were all from attachments to John Podesta emails, and they were not hacked from the DNC. This becomes crucial when you look at the timeline of how these events played out. So there's a lot of detail here, and I don't have time to go through it line by line with you. But I encourage you to take a hard look at this, because while it doesn't disprove central elements of the Mueller indictment, it does raise important questions that really need to be asked. And one item here is Mueller states that July 14th was the date of Guccifer 2's first successful transfer of material to WikiLeaks. Clearly, this date is later than the July 5th date on which many files found in the Clinton Foundation archives were transferred. Where is the evidence that these files were not used for the 1-gigabyte-sized encrypted link sent to WikiLeaks on the 14th of July? So there are inconsistencies in the narrative that is teased out of the Mueller indictments. And so I think that it is worthy of your time to take a closer look. Now, late yesterday, Rachel Maddow went into hyperdrive when she reported that a Russian national who's being accused of being an agent for Russia in the United States was arrested over the weekend. She is 29-year-old Maria Butina, and it appears that she was trying to run connections between Moscow and the National Rifle Association. She started a Russian gun rights group called the Right to Bear Arms in 2011. She got John Bolton to appear in a paid video support statement for the Russian group trying to win a Second Amendment equivalent. And the allegation is that she is tight with Alexander Torshin, who is a high-level Russian state banker and who also is a he's been given life membership in the NRA. Now, what's fascinating to me are two things. One is that this could be a real source of corruption, where Russian interests, we don't know whether it was the government or others, may have funneled money through the NRA, which ran ads in support of Trump. They spent more, the NRA spent more in the 2016 cycle on television ads than they have in any presidential race in the past. The other important note here is that Maria Butina has been indicted by the FBI and a federal prosecutor in Washington, D.C., not by the Mueller investigation. So it appears that her case is separate. Yesterday, I reported on the new apartheid law that is moving through the Knesset in Israel. And today, the AP advances the story, noting that there were big demonstrations in Tel Aviv opposing this proposed legislation. And as a result, Netanyahu and his allies made some changes to delete the most offensive language that would allow for separate communities that critics believe could establish racist barriers or racist regulations. So we'll continue to follow that, but I'm glad to see that there are protests in Israel. Every day I pause to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And there are great people all over the world who I count on as listeners and funders. Jason Ferguson. Oh, no, we mentioned him yesterday. Let's single out the great actor from Philadelphia, Joey Perillo, Wendy Gebauer, Paul Tomaselli, and Abby McMillan. They're all big supporters of this podcast, and I would appreciate it if you join them. Just click on to peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, click on Become a Subscriber. You land up on the sign-up page, and there you can choose the level of support that you're comfortable with. If you take out a new annual subscription and give me an address in the continental United States, I will be happy to send you a copy of John Dist's new rock and roll CD called American University. That's my current bonus gift. We've been telling you about the risk of Sinclair Broadcasting. They own local TV stations across the country that they program centrally with hard right-wing propaganda that makes Fox News look fair and balanced. And Ajit Pai is the Republican chair of the Federal Communications Commission, and they are reviewing the acquisition by Sinclair of Tribune Media's television stations that would make Sinclair the largest single television station owner in the country. And Ajit Pai helped grease the way for this by changing rules at the FCC related to what's called the UHF discount. And essentially, it means that stations that operate on channels above number 14 are not treated as significant or as significant as the ones on channel 14 or below. And this goes back to the old technology. But now Ajit Pai has decided that this may be too much. And he's unhappy with the proposal by Sinclair to spin off some of their TV stations to get underneath the national ownership cap of 39% of television households. And Pai said the evidence we've received suggests that certain station divestitures that have been proposed would allow Sinclair to control those stations in practice, even if not in name, in violation of the law. Go for it, Ajit. It's about time you read your own damn regulations. Here in California, over the weekend, the state Democratic Party had its conference, and they declined to endorse Dianne Feinstein for a fifth term in the United States Senate. Instead, 65% of the delegates voted for her challenger, Kevin DeLeon. Feinstein only got 7% of the vote. Another 28% followed her request to vote for no endorsement. But that still stacks up as 65 to 35. And people are getting the idea that it's time for DiFi to retire. And the San Francisco Chronicle's political reporter Joe Garofoli confirmed in Monday's paper something I've been saying for a while. Democrats are running away from abortion rights. Now, while they are pillorying Brett Kavanaugh, the latest Catholic to be nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court, who clearly is opposed to abortion rights, at the local level, the candidates running for Congress don't mention abortion rights. Oh, if somebody asks them, they might have a comment, but they don't talk about it on their websites. It is not a central issue. They use euphemisms like reproductive health and, you know, women's control over their bodies. But this is a sea change. This is a major, major divergence for the Democratic Party. They have decided that they can't win elections by staunchly supporting a woman's right to choose. And I submit that that is just another example of the way they have drifted apart from the people they consider their loyal party members. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. You're free to share it far and wide. You'll find it on YouTube. And I remain Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.